smiling.
I know.
She took the letter and retreated beneath the bridge, where the heavy weeping branches of willows cocooned her, and she could pretend to be far from the poisonous castle. There were many reasons why Radu might not have come. He was ill. He was delayed. He was dead. Or he finally had what he wanted, and nothing could tempt him to leave. Lada only marginally preferred the last option to his death. She split the seal and opened the letter. It took her a moment to process that it was not from Radu, telling her whether he would join her in her quest for Valahia. It was from Mahmed. Her face flushed as she read and then reread the first few lines, horrified.
I dream of her neck, slender and unadorned as the gazelle. I long to see her tresses, draping a cloth between us and our nakedness. Her breasts like smooth mirrors, her legs like slender reeds bent by the water. At eventide she lightens the shadows, a lamp against the night. And I will not forswear that fire nor the passion it alights in my body, swift and taut as an arrow at the ready, with her, my target. What has he shat out on this page? Lada muttered, scowling at the words. Mahmed had tried to read her poetry before, and she always stopped him. It was a waste of words and breath. Who had ever looked with lust upon a gazelle? And her breasts had nothing like the mirror about them. She skimmed the rest of the poem. When he had finally finished comparing her body to various objects and animals, he moved on to business. I know you have not been successful in your attempts at the throne. I wish I could help. However, I have a proposition. Lada scowled. He did not wish that he could help. He had very clearly demonstrated he wished no such thing. She braced herself for his suggestion that she return to him. Do whatever you must to persuade Hunyadi to stay out of Constantinople, and I will be able to part with enough men to give you the strength you need to reclaim your throne. Send word back with my ambassadors. Once I have it, I will wait for you in the south of Transylvania, where it meets Serbia and Valahia.
Lada dropped the letter in her lap. Whatever she had thought Mahmed might write, whatever sly attempts to lure her back or to remind her she had made the wrong choice, they were not there. She did not know if that disappointed her, but she had found something she had not expected. Support. He wanted her to succeed, and he was offering her help. Her way to the throne had opened up again. All she had to do was betray Hunyadi. It was dark by the time Lada walked in a daze back to camp. Her men still lived outside, with no room for them in the barracks. It suited them fine, and it suited her as well. She preferred a tent to the stone prison of Hunidwara. When she entered her tent, she found Wana sitting on the rug next to a lamp, mending in her lap. As a child, Lada had sometimes wondered if her nurse came with sewing supplies permanently attached. Lada collapsed onto her bedroll with a sigh. "What are you doing in here?" she asked Wana. "Bogdan snores. This is my reward for carrying his great weight for 9 months and nearly dying bringing him into the world. My beautiful little boy turned into a great hulking man who sounds like a dying pig when he sleeps." Lada could not help laughing. "Have you walked the camp at night? An army of boars would make less noise than my men do." Wana nodded, squinting, and set aside her work. "It is too dark for my old eyes." "Sleep." Lada stripped some of the furs from her bedroll and tossed them at Wana. "Or if you want, I can probably get you a bed in the castle."
"Lada, my dear one, you got me my Bogdan back. You do not need to get me anything ever again." The nurse sounded dangerously close to crying. "Though," she said, her voice turning gruff, "I would very much like to get out of Hungary. They all have marbles in their mouths. I cannot understand one word in 5. You may get your wish soon enough." "Back to Valahia."
Lada let out a breath, heavy with the weight of the future.
"No. Hunyadi plans to defend Constantinople. Why would we go there?"
because he thinks it is the right thing to do.
The nurse made a derisive sound.
The devil take Byzantium and all his glory. He never did anything for us.
Larda listened as the nurse lay down and shifted around, making all the small noises tired bodies make. It was annoying, but there was also something comforting about having another woman present, someone she knew cared for her.
Which way is the wrong way? Larda asked.
How much should I give if it means getting back to Valahia?
She could lie to Mahmed, tell him she had persuaded Hunyadi to stay out of Constantinople. He would not discover her duplicity until she already had the troops. There would be hell to pay after, though, and her castle was already filled with enemies. Hunyadi's love and trust was a valuable thing. It meant more to Larda than she had thought possible, but he could not get her the throne, and she did not feel the pull of Constantinople that all the men in her life seemed to. Hunyadi, she cared about. Constantinople was only a city. Valahia, though, Valahia was everything. As though hearing Larda's thoughts, her nurse echoed,
Everything. There is no cost too high for your people, for your land.
Even if it means betraying someone who trusts me, or making deals with the empire that took your son from you.
You brought him back. You brought yourself back. Valahia needs you, and you deserve Valahia. Let your loyalty be only where your heart is. Everything else can fall by the road and be trodden underfoot as we pass to our home.
Wana patted Larda's arm.
My fierce little girl. You can do anything.
Larda did not know if it was permission or prophecy, but she believed it either way. Though manipulating people was Radu's area of expertise, Larda found the opportunity to do so handed to her with all the poetic grace of a gazelle's neck. Hunyadi paced in front of her. He had called her to the meeting room in the castle, but this time only the two of them were present.
What about Serbia?
He asked. Larda shook her head. I know for a fact Mara Brunkovic, one of Murad's wives, made a new treaty for Serbia. If you go to Constantinople, you will fight against Serbians, not with them. Larda wondered briefly what Mara Brunkovic was doing with her cleverly purchased freedom. Mara had taken an offer of marriage from Constantine himself and used it to forge a deal between Mahmed and her father, the Serbian prince, creating a new, permanently single life for herself.
Damn, Hunyadi leaned back with a sigh.
What do you think of the Dineshed prince?
I know you hate him, but will he aid us?
Maybe he will die at the wall, which would be very convenient for you.
Larda dragged a knife along the tabletop, scoring the wood deeply.
He is a worm, and not long ago he was in Adirna, delivering his loyalty to Mahmed in person.
How do you know?
Because I had someone in Turguviste trying to kill him at the time.
Hunyadi shook his head, but his expression was more amused than shocked. Besides, Larda continued, he cannot commit troops without the boyars giving him support. They will bide their time and twiddle their thumbs until any usefulness has passed. And then they will send their condolences.
The Valahian boyars like me, though.
Yes, and they fear Mahmed.
Which do you think will be a stronger motivator among that pack of cowards? Hunyadi nodded grudgingly.
I have some support, though. Elizabeth encourages me to go, and I have you and your men. It will be good for you to have something to do.
Larda already had something to do. She respected Hunyadi, but he could not give her the throne. Mahmed could. He could also take it from her afterward, if she failed to uphold her end of their bargain.
Elizabeth is exactly why you need to stay, Larda said, working her knife back and forth along the gash she was carving into the table.
What do you mean?
Hungary is in turmoil. Ladislas will not live long, and Elizabeth knows you are a threat to her power. Matthias has a chance at the throne.
Your son could be king. She paused, letting the word hang in the air between them. He will never have a better chance at the throne. If you go to Constantinople, Elizabeth will maneuver him out of the castle. You must see how much your strength and reputation buoy his popularity. All your toil and blood will be wasted if you shed it for misplaced loyalty to the emperor of a dead land. The lines in Hunyadi's face deepened.
But I go for Christianity.
Serve Christianity here. Protect the borders. Keep Mahmed from pushing farther into Europe. He will not be satisfied with taking Constantinople. As soon as the city falls, his eyes will turn toward Hungary. You cannot leave it under a weak child king and his conniving mother. Lada paused, as though thinking. Besides, you will not make a difference at the walls. She knew that was false. If Mahmed was willing to trade troops for the promise that Hunyadi would stay out, he understood that Hunyadi's experience and reputation were both weapons that could tip the city out of Ottoman reach forever. Hunyadi would absolutely make a difference to the defense of the city. And Lada could not let that happen.
But the infidels,
if even the Pope does not see this as a threat to Christianity, I hardly think you need to worry about it. Cities fall, borders change. God endures.
Lada finally dared look at Hunyadi, and what she saw nearly destroyed her resolve. He looked older than he had when he began speaking, and infinitely more tired.
I already told Emperor Constantine I would fight for him. He depends on my aid. Matthias can manage without me.
Lada saw her opening, and she struck deep. Then you are no better than my father. He sold our future for his own selfish desires, just as you would sell Matthias's to satisfy your soldierly pride. Hunyadi held his hands apart, palms up, and looked down at them. They were thick and calloused hands, with knotted joints. Then he dropped them to his sides, his shoulders drooping.
You are right. It is selfish of me to seek glory elsewhere. My duty is here.
Lada wanted to embrace him. She wanted to offer him comfort. She wanted to confess that she cared nothing for Matthias or Constantinople, but that she did care for Hunyadi. And she had manipulated him anyway. Instead, she let him walk away alone. Then she drafted her letter to Mahmed. His ambassadors were leaving the next day and would carry it to him. They would deliver her betrayal and her future to Mahmed. Valahia was waiting. XVII. Late March. The next day they passed Rumeli Hisar, Mahmed's new fortress. Radu strained his neck to see as much as he could from the road. The fortress loomed, three soaring towers watching over the Bosphorus. Cyprian regarded it with sad, solemn eyes. Valentine spat in its direction. They paused as a series of stakes came into view. Lining the banks of the Bosphorus, decapitated bodies stood sentry.
What happened?
Nazira whispered. Cyprian's gaze darkened.
Someone must have tried to get through the blockade. This is the Sultan's warning that the strait is closed.
They rode on, silent and disturbed. Radu remembered all too well his first lesson in Mahmed's father's court. He and Lada had been forced to watch as the head gardener had impaled several men. It was the beginning of many such lessons in the absolute rule of law. Radu had been able to forget them, mostly, since being taken under Mahmed's wing. But apparently, Mahmed had received the same tutelage. It was not long before they saw the patrol riding from Rumeli Hisar. One of the ironies of a secret mission was that Radu was as liable to be killed by his own side as he was the enemy. Cyprian drew his sword.
No, Radu said. Let me talk to them. I think I can get us past.
He scanned the soldiers' faces desperately as they got closer, but he knew none of them. Radu sat as straight and commandingly on his horse as he could manage after 3 days on the road. They were not in open war with Constantinople yet. He could make this work. He had to.
"Who is your commander?"
he asked, his tone both lazy and imperious, as though he had nothing to fear and every right to make demands. The men slowed, fanning out to surround the small group. Their horses trotted a slow circle around them.
"What business do you have in the city?" asked a man in front.
Missing teeth beneath his clean-shaven lip gave him a lisp. Under other circumstances, it might have struck Radu as funny, but the man had his sword drawn, which dampened any humour. Radu lifted an eyebrow.
"I bring a message to Constantine from our glorious Sultan, the hand of God on earth, the blessed Mahmed."
"What message?"
Radu curled his upper lip, channeling larder.
"I was not aware you had been made emperor of Constantinople."
The man jutted out his chin angrily.
"How do I know you are telling the truth?"
"By all means, detain me and take the time to send word to the Sultan. I am sure he will look kindly on you interfering with his express wishes."
The soldier looked less sure of himself and pulled his horse back sharply.
"Who are you, then? I will send a message that we have seen you."
"My name is Radu."
The man frowned, then a mean smile revealed all the gaps in his teeth again.
"Radu the Handsome? I have heard of you."
Radu pretended he was not surprised by this unusual title.
"Then you know you should get out of my way."
The man gestured to the other soldiers, and they moved to the side. The gap-toothed soldier spoke in a low, ugly tone as Radu rode past.
"Are you sure you're not a gift for the Emperor? Maybe he has a taste for pretty boys, too."
The soldiers laughed, the sound hitting Radu's back like blows. But he did not cringe, and he did not turn around, riding straight and steady toward the city.
"Well done," Cyprian said alongside him. "I thought we were all dead."
"There are some benefits to being notoriously handsome, after all," Nazira said. She tried to pass it off as a joke, but Radu heard the strain beneath her voice. He was more troubled by the soldier's insinuation. How had he heard of Radu? And what did he mean? That the Emperor might have a taste for beautiful boys, too? The implication was that Radu had been the beautiful pet of another man. He could think of only one man this rumour might be directed at. He tried to shake the thought off, but it lay heavier across his back than his winter cloak.
"Look," Nazira said, pointing. "Ships!"
The road curved, and a view of the Bosporus Strait opened up. 7 large, beautiful ships were sailing at a brisk clip toward the twin fortresses. Radu wondered where they were going and envied the sailors' obvious skill. He had not seen such masterful maneuvering among their own navy. It planted a seed of doubt deep inside. Cyprian cried out.
"No!" "What? What has happened?"
Radu whipped around, certain his lie had been revealed and the gap-toothed soldier was coming for them. But the road was empty. Cyprian looked out at the water.
"Those are Italian ships. They must have hundreds of men aboard. They flee the city."
Cyprian's shoulders fell, his head hanging heavy.
"They abandon us. News of war has outpaced us. Come, we must hurry to console my uncle."
They spurred their tired horses forward, the wall so long at the forefront of Mahmed's mind, and therefore Radu's, was anticlimactic. Miles and miles of stone, worn and patched with jumbles of mismatching rocks, cut through farmland. Radu could not fathom how anyone was able to man the wall. It was too long. But it was also too high, easily 5 times taller than him. Any advance could be seen and met. There was nowhere to hide, no point more vulnerable to attack than any other. And behind the outer wall was another one.
"Stop gaping so," Nazira said, elbowing him. "You look like a slack-jawed boy from the country."
Her smile was a tight warning. He had been scanning the walls as an invader. He was fortunate Cyprian focused only on the path ahead. Radu had wanted so long to be here, but he had never anticipated being escorted through a gate with a salute from soldiers posted there. Just like that, they were within the outer walls. Radu risked one look back as the gate closed behind them. He did not know when or if he would leave again. He glanced at Nazira, who rode tall and proud on her horse, a hopeful smile pasted onto her face. He copied her confidence. Cyprian was far enough ahead that he dared speak. He leaned closer to her. "How are you so good at this?" She lifted a hand in the air, gesturing toward herself. "When you spend your whole life learning how to show people only what you want them to see, so your truest self remains safe, you become quite adept at it." She smiled sadly at Radu. "You understand?" He nodded. She was right. He knew how to do this. It would work. "I am glad to have you with me." She laughed. "Of course you are. Now, put on a sorrowful but curious expression, and let us go see the city that is our sultan's destiny." Radu faced forward again as they drew closer to the smaller wall that barred the way into the city. It felt like his whole life had been leading him here. If this was not how he had expected to enter, well, he would simply make the best of it. After all, Constantinople was the greatest city in the world. Constantinople was not the greatest city in the world. Compared with Edirne, it was a city of ruins, a city of ghosts. More than half the narrow, crowding houses they passed had an air of dereliction about them. Refuse filled the streets and pushed against foundations. Doors hung askew on some houses or were missing altogether from others. They passed entire blocks without seeing a soul, unless scraggly stray cats and mean-looking mangy dogs had souls, in which case they passed many souls. As Radu's group moved from the outskirts, things improved slightly. More of the homes appeared lived in. A few stalls with vendors popped up here and there, the men half-heartedly soliciting them as they passed. Women hurried through the streets, dragging children and darting furtive glances at their mounted procession. Radu had expected more soldiers patrolling, especially if word of war had already reached the city, but they had seen no one aside from the guards at the gates. And he had seen nothing of the fabled wealth of Constantinople. He had always known, rationally, that the streets were not paved in gold, but he had expected something more. Even Turgo Viste had glittered brighter than this. Finally, they came to a quarter that showed more life. They pulled to an abrupt stop as a priest crossed their path, swinging a censer and trailing scented smoke in his wake. He sang hauntingly in Greek. Behind him was a parade of people. It took several minutes before the citizens, eerily silent save for the singing priest, finally passed, and their way was clear again. "What was that?" Radu asked. "A procession." Cyprian looked troubled. "There is no small amount of internal strife. Most of it centers around orthodoxy versus the Catholic Church. I will explain later. Come." Bells tolled, their clanging echoing through the city. Cyprian looked up, then sighed. "I had forgotten the day. My uncle will be in the cathedral. We cannot speak with him there. Come, I will get you settled. I have a home near the palace."
"We cannot intrude," Nazira said. "Surely there is some place else."
Cyprian waved her worries away.
"I have many bedrooms, and only one me. We could all live there and never see one another. Much like this city, my home is in need of a much higher population."
Cyprian's house was not far. It was a handsome, well-maintained building. The houses in Constantinople practically shared walls, narrow gaps between them, sometimes disappearing where the roofs met. He pulled out a key and opened the front door. They were greeted with a wall of frigid air.
"Valentine, go start the fires."
The boy nodded and ran inside. Cyprian frowned.
"I have a maid." "Where is that girl? The main room should have a fire going already. Maria? Maria?"
There was no response.
"Well, come in. It will warm up soon enough."
He led them to a small sitting room, where Valentine had already succeeded in lighting a fire. They heard footsteps on the stairs.
"Maria?"
"Just me,"
Valentine called out.
"No one else here."
Cyprian looked troubled. Nazira put a hand on his.
Your home is lovely. Thank you so much. I hope you know your kindness is not unappreciated.
Of course.
Cyprian covered her hand with his other hand.
I am sorry. I have been so caught up in my own worries and fears, I scarcely thought how you must be feeling. You have left your home, your country, all your possessions. He turned to Radu. Both of you have.
Radu thought of what Lada might have said in response.
Adirna was my prison, not my home. Nazira's is the true sacrifice.
She nodded, looking down. I will miss my garden, but I no longer recognize the landscape of the Empire under this new Sultan, and I do not think I belong there any more.
She stood straighter, brightening.
And I have my Radu.
Radu tried to imagine what Fatima must be doing right now, alone in the home that she shared with Nazira. How she must worry. If his separation from Mahmed was agony, how much worse to be separated from someone with whom you shared everything, including your heart. He held out his arms. Nazira met him, resting her head against his chest. Cyprian watched them with the same look of longing Radu had seen before. Then he cleared his throat.
I will see to some food and send a message to the palace to find out when the Emperor can meet with us.
He left them alone. Radu stroked Nazira's back one last time, and then they sat, side by side, staring into the fire.
I like him, Nazira said, and it sounded like a eulogy.
Me too, Radu echoed.
18. Late March. Larda's men had nearly finished breaking camp when Hunyadi rode up. His horse pranced and shifted beneath him, picking up on his agitation.
You have heard, then? He asked Larda.
She paused in tightening her saddle straps. Heard what? She asked, careful not to reveal anything by her tone.
Rumors of Ottoman troops massing in Belgrade, with designs on our Serbian border. You were right about Serbian loyalties, housing the infidels in their own capital.
Larda whipped around. How had Mahmed been this stupid? They were to meet in southern Transylvania. Surely he would not have come close to the Hungarian border? She had accepted that she needed Mahmed's help, but she would be damned if she let Hunyadi know what she had done.
Are you certain?
Hunyadi shook his head.
One report, and the scout saw nothing himself. But I cannot risk this, not with Matthias so close to the throne. You were wise to counsel me to stay.
He smiled at her, his eyes sad.
My duty is here. I cannot turn my back on Matthias for Constantinople. When will your men be ready to ride?
Larda was seized with a sudden need to recheck every strap on her saddle. You want us to ride into Serbia?
No. I want you in Transylvania. Protect the passes in case the Ottomans try to go through Transylvania and come into Hungary that way.
Hunyadi had aided her yet again, giving her the simplest way to disguise her true goals, Mahmed and Valahia. She nodded.
We will go to Transylvania, but after, we are not coming back. We will continue on when the way is clear.
She let her words imply that she would continue after the Ottomans were gone, though she meant she would continue once the Ottomans had cleared a way for her.
We go to Valahia.
Hunyadi put out his hand to stop Larda's frantic tugging on an already tight buckle. His voice was soft with concern.
What awaits you there?
I do not know what will happen, but I know that it is my country. I spent too many years in exile. I cannot continue to exile myself. We go back to whatever fate holds for us, live or die. I want it to be on Valachian ground.
Give me more time. Let me secure our borders, address this rumor of a threat. Once Matthias is on the throne, we can help you.
Larda shook her head. Though a few weeks ago, she would have clung to that offer. Now, she knew better. A promise of help that might never materialize was worth less than a sultan already waiting with troops. She had to do this for Valahia. Her thoughts lingered on Mahmed. Her Mahmed, waiting for her. She pretended that was not a factor in her desperation to go. But her heart knew her to be a liar of the worst sort.
Valahia,
she whispered firmly to herself. Before she could think better of it, she threw her arms around Hunyadi.
Thank you,
she said.
For everything.
He patted her back.
Be careful, little dragon. You and I were made for battlefields, not royal courts. Do not start fights you have no weapons for.
He kissed her forehead, then got back on his horse.
May God be with you.
Lada smiled, and this time it was genuine. God only sees me when I am in Valahia. Hunyadi laughed.
Give him my regards, then.
He turned his horse and rode away, much slower than he had come. Lada watched him go, her smile disappearing. Her nurse, carrying their bedrolls, caught her eye and gave her a sharp nod. It was time to go home. 19. Late March. Cyprian returned, carrying a basket of bread and cheese and a skinny chicken with its neck already snapped. He motioned them to follow him into the kitchen. Radu and Nazira had been sitting in silence in front of the fire, both consumed with private strife. Radu had no doubt Nazira's revolved around thoughts of Fatima, but his was an endless cycle of worrying over what Mahmed was doing and how Radu could prove his worth to him. Nazira gently edged Cyprian out of the way.
Show me where the dishes are, and make a fire in the stove.
Cyprian nodded and gave her a tour of the kitchen. It appeared to be his first tour as well.
Oh, look, that is a lot of pots. Why do we need so many pots?
Laughing, Nazira pointed at the table.
Go sit, you oaf. I can figure it out better on my own, anyhow.
Cyprian did as he was told.
I solved the mystery of my missing maid. Apparently word of my death has spread far and wide. She considered it notice of termination of her employment, and fled not only my house, but also the city. So many have. I hope she will be all right.
He sighed, rubbing his face wearily.
I will try to find a replacement, but I do not think it will be easy.
We can manage quite well, Nazira said.
She smiled at Valentine, who had materialized and was helping stoke the fire in the stove.
Valentine is more than capable, and I am not unfamiliar with kitchens. I think we will do very nicely without extra bodies in the house.
She caught Radu's eyes. She was right, of course. The fewer people watching them in close quarters, the better.
Thank you,
Cyprian said. His relief was visible, a relaxing of the tightness around his eyes and the strain in his shoulders. There was a knock at the door. Valentine left and then returned, accompanied by a liveried servant wearing a vest with the double-headed eagle crest of the Emperor.
The Emperor wishes to see you immediately.
Radu stood.
I am at his disposal. We will go at once.
Radu and Cyprian fastened their cloaks as they stepped out into the chilly afternoon. The servant walked at a pace so brisk he was almost running.
Is there anything I should know before I go in?
Radu asked, seized with nerves. This first meeting was the most important. If he could gain the Emperor's trust now, he would be positioned perfectly. If he could not, well, that would be a much more unfortunate position. Cyprian put a hand on Radu's shoulder.
You have nothing to fear.
Radu could not agree with that. Constantine, just like the city he ruled, was not what Radu had expected. He was older, nearer to 50 than 40. His hair had thinned on top. In place of an elaborate crown, he wore a simple metal circlet on his head. Though every other man adhered to the fashion of layers, the Emperor did not follow suit. His white shirt and purple breeches were simple, even austere. He seemed utterly devoid of pretense. What a luxury honesty was. Radu and Cyprian stood at the back of the crowded room. Constantine paced near the front, his tall, thin body leaning into the movement so that his head led the way with every step. With a start, Radu realized the Emperor's feet were bare. He stifled a surprised laugh at the absurdity of the Emperor of Rome walking around without even stockings.
"What of the Golden Horn and the Sea Wall?" the Emperor asked. "We have nothing to fear there," a man said, waving dismissively.
He was tall and broad, his body a blunt instrument of war.
"A handful of poorly trained ships against my Italian sailors is nothing. We are perfectly safe on the seawall."
Radu saw his opportunity. Telling Constantine the truth and about something easily confirmed would solidify his status. Knowing what they faced would not magically replace the 7 ships that had already fled, or line their walls with men that were not coming.
"You are not safe there," Radu said, every face turned to him with curiosity. "When I left, Admiral Suleiman had 6 large galleys, 10 regular, 15 small. 75 large rowboats for transporting men and navigating small spaces. 20 horse transports."
The change in the air was palpable.
"Who are you?" the Italian man demanded. "Radu of..."
Radu paused, again not knowing what name to give himself.
"Radu, most recently of Adena, where I served at Mahmed's, the Sultan's, side these last several years. Most particularly overseeing the secret development of his navy."
Cyprian put a hand on Radu's shoulder.
"This is the man who saved my life, uncle."
Constantine pointed at a man near the door.
"Send word to the governor of Galata. Tell him we are drawing the chain across the horn to block all entry."
No one moved.
"No!"
he shouted. The man stood bowing and ran from the room.
"Is that to be his main point of attack, then?" Constantine asked.
Radu shook his head.
"He means to press you on all sides. If he can get through on the seaward side, he will. But his focus is the land walls." "The walls will stand," a priest said. "They have always stood. They will always stand."
"They have always withstood attacks before, but attacks change," Radu said. "The Sultan spares no expense on new methods and weapons. He has studied the walls, has even been here in person. He means to focus on the Lycos River Valley and the section outside the palace."
A man near the front frowned. He wore clothes closer in fashion to the Ottomans than to the Byzantines.
"Those are obvious choices. We already know this." "Orhan is right," the Italian man said.
Radu startled, looking closer at the oddly dressed man who had just spoken. Orhan was the false heir to the Ottoman Empire.
A man whom Constantinople had used to threaten Mehmed's rule since before it began.
Even now, Mehmed had to send money periodically, or else Constantine would send Orhan into the empire to stir up civil war. Orhan had been and was an actual active threat to Mehmed's life. Anger flared in Radu's heart. He wanted something to hurt these people, to make them feel the fear they should.
"He has artillery." "We have seen artillery," a portly man shouted. "So he throws some stones." "Our stones are bigger."
Laughter echoed through the room. Encouraged, the man continued.
"The Ottomans have never had stones as big as ours."
Radu offered a tight smile in response to the man's dirty bravado.
"They have a cannon, 4 times my height, that can shoot a 600-pound ball over a mile."
No one laughed at that, though several scoffed visibly. Constantine sighed.
"We may as well bring in food, and I hope someone is writing all this down."
He gestured for Radu to take an empty seat nearby. Radu sat. He was in, for good or ill. Constantine looked at the ceiling as though an answer were there.
"What if we relinquish Orhan's claim?"
Radu looked at the pretend heir. Orhan stared down at his hands, which were soft and pale. Not warrior's hands, like Constantine's, or the Italian's. Orhan nodded. Constantine reached out and squeezed the other man's shoulder.
We release any threat against Mahmed's legitimacy. We graciously decline payment for the land the Rumeli Hisar is built on. We increase our payments to him.
Radu wondered if he should encourage that. Perhaps Mahmed would want it. But he would still attack, and everything here would be Mahmed's in the end. So it did not matter. Radu would tell the truth.
His mind is set on the city with a singular focus. He has spoken and dreamed of little else since he was 12. I do not think anything will deter him now. You can offer, but short of surrender, you should prepare for siege.
Radu dared to hope that after hearing his tales of men and cannons, they would surrender. He could deliver the city, unharmed, directly to Mahmed. Constantine turned to the Italian, eyebrows raised expectantly.
Giustiniani.
Giustiniani's Greek was heavily accented, but he spoke with a command and even a joviality that demanded confidence.
We are nearly settled, Your Grace. We stretched your purse as far as we could. Oh, the food and water is stored. We have enough to last for a year, with minimal supplementation.
He smiled bitterly.
There are advantages to so many leaving, after all.
Radu wilted inside. No easy surrender, then. Giustiniani continued.
We may be outmatched in artillery, boats, and men. Overwhelmingly outmatched in men. But rest assured, Constantinople is still the best-defended city in the world. It will not fall easily. Tell me, Radu, do you think we can outlast Mahmed?
Radu weighed the truth. Surrender was not on their minds yet, and they were right to make an effort. Even speaking the words felt disloyal, but acknowledging reality would not change it.
If you can draw out the siege long enough, you have a chance. The Ottomans have come against Constantinople before, and they have always failed. They are superstitious. They will see portents of doom in any delay or failed initiative. Mahmed will be fighting time and morale. He is better prepared than anyone who has ever come before, but he is betting his throne and his legacy on this single assault. If you can outlast him, he will never be able to amass the support to make another attempt.
So, if we do this, the city is safe from him.
Radu nodded.
I do not doubt that if Mahmed fails at the wall, he will not live long afterward. There are too many powerful men who do not like him.
The thought terrified Radu. Halil Vizier was still with Mahmed, working against him at every possible turn. How could Radu protect Mahmed from here? Constantine stared blankly at the floor, his expression far away.
All we have to do is outlast him, then.
It was as simple and as impossible as that. 20. Late March.
Where are you going? Bogdan asked.
Lada whipped around, knives in her hands. Taking a deep breath, she put them away. It was near midnight. She had thought her furtive exit from camp would go unmarked. She should have known Bogdan would mark it, as he did all her movements. He had a way of tracking her, watching her without watching. His childhood loyalty had grown as broad and strong as he had. Usually Lada found comfort in that, but lately it felt far more serious, like he was not only looking for her, but also looking for something from her. She had been deliberately vague about their purpose on the shared border of Hungary, Transylvania, and Wallachia. None of her men had questioned her disobeying Hunyadi's directive and leaving the Transylvanian passes they were supposed to guard. Lada did not know how her men would feel about taking up with the Ottomans yet again. Some harbored less ill will toward their one-time captors and benefactors. Others hated them. Doubtless, some would prefer to fight for Constantinople than at the sides of Ottomans. But she was their leader. They joined her to take back Wallachia, and she did not need permission to make decisions. If they did not like it, they were welcome to make their own way. Her way was forward, to the throne, however she got there. "You are supposed to be patrolling on the other end of camp," she snapped. Though she could not see his face, she could practically feel Bogdan's blunt smile. "You did not answer my question." "Because I do not have to. I am leaving. I will be back. That is everything you need to know." "Something is wrong." "Nothing is wrong." All day she had been on edge, knowing how close Mahmed was. She was not certain of the precise location of his camp, but she knew it was within a few miles of where she stood now. Mahmed was within a few miles, not separated by rivers and countries and the year that had come between them. She thought she had hidden her agitation well, but apparently not.
"I will go with you."
"No!" "Not Bogdan. Anyone but Bogdan." Larda could not face him if he found out what she was doing. Admitting it felt like asking permission, and she refused to do that. Besides, she remembered Bogdan's thinly veiled distaste for Mahmed. She did not want to bring that along with her. "I must go alone."
"Why?"
"Get back to your patrol." Bogdan stood unmoving for 5 eternally long breaths. Then he walked off into the night. Larda hurried through the dark, knives back in both hands. She had a lot of ground to cover. It would have been easier on a horse, but that would have drawn even more attention to her departure. Still, after an hour crisscrossing through the terrain, looking for signs of a camp, Larda found herself slowing down. She wished she could enjoy walking alone. Solitude was not a luxury she had much of lately, but she knew what awaited her. Who awaited her? And she did not know how to feel about seeing him again after so long apart. She had not been able to sort through her feelings, to separate what was real and what was merely a reaction to the circumstances of her childhood. What if she saw Mahmed and felt nothing? Worse, what if she saw Mahmed and felt everything as acutely as she had when they were together? It had been a hard thing leaving him. Would this reopen the wound? Before she could settle her emotions, she saw the familiar white cap of a Yanacheri. It glowed in the moonlight. Annoyance flickered through Larda. They should know better than to wear those white caps at night. If she were an assassin, this sentry would already be dead. A slow, vicious smile spread across her face. She had planned on walking into the camp and announcing herself. She was not expected tonight. Mahmed had merely said where they would be. There had been no specific time to meet established. It was a night to play Kill the Sultan. She generously decided not to hurt any sentries. They would probably be punished for their failure to detect her, but they deserved that. The first was easily skirted. The second and third announced their approach with a cacophony of snapping twigs. Closer to camp, the going was more difficult. The tents were packed close and under cover of trees. Between the trees and the darkness, Larda could not get a sense for how many men Mahmed had brought. It did not seem like enough. He probably had them spread out, though. That was what she would have done. She pressed into the deeper darkness behind a tent as 2 Yanacheris walked by, talking in quiet voices. She had an odd stirring of something that felt like nostalgia at hearing Turkish again. Scowling, she gripped her knives harder. Mahmed's tent might as well have had his name painted on it. It was the largest, made of sumptuous cloth in what she assumed would be red and gold in the sunlight. That was another mistake. If she were in charge, he would be sleeping in one of the small, anonymous tents. Make an assassin look through every tent, rather than boldly advertising the target. He really did make this too easy. Larda peered around the edge of a soldier's tent from which gentle snores emanated. The entrance to Mahmed's grand tent was manned by 2 Yanacheris, both awake and alert. Larda slipped around to the back of the tent, which was guarded only by her friend, Darkness. She darted forward, not hesitating, as she stabbed a knife into the tent and dragged it down. With only the barest whisper of material, she had her own private entrance. Inside, it was dim, a cool brazier in the corner giving only a faint glow. Lada wondered who had to carry the furniture Mahmed travelled with. A desk, a stool, a full table, an assortment of pillows and a bed. No bedrolls for the Sultan, whose body was too precious for the ground, and whose body was in that bed, breathing softly. Lada crept forward with her knife raised, and then she stopped, looking down at Mahmed. She had forgotten the thick sweep of his black lashes. His full lips were turned down at the corners, as though his dreams troubled him. His hair, so often covered by turbans the past few years, was draped on his pillow, one strand lying across his forehead. Lada was filled with a sudden tenderness. She reached out and brushed the hair from his skin.
He awoke with a start,
grabbing her wrist. His eyes were wide, body tensed for a fight. Lada leaned closer. She had never seen this ferocity in his face. She wanted to taste it. Mahmed kept his painful grip on her wrist. "Lada?" he asked, blinking rapidly.
"I have just killed you."
"Again." He pulled her down, meeting her lips with a desperate hunger. She dropped the knife. She had forgotten what it was to be kissed, to be desired. She had thought she did not need it. She had been wrong. Mahmed moved from her lips to her neck, his hands in her hair. "When you left, you took my heart with you. Kill me, Lada," he said with so much longing she could not keep her own hands off him. He rolled so she was beneath him. His hands explored her body, alternating between rough greediness and softness so gentle it nearly hurt her. He put his mouth against her ear. "I have learned some things," he said, voice teasing, "about pleasure." Before she could wonder where he had learned those things, things she had accused him of not caring about aside from his own satisfaction, he moved down her body. Her back arched as his hands slid under her tunic and up her torso. She grabbed his hair, not knowing whether she wanted to pull him away or draw him closer. She feared if he continued, she would lose control. She had never let herself lose control before. His hands found the space between her legs, and she cried out with the shock and intensity of it. He responded with greater eagerness, kissing her stomach, her breasts. He pulled her tunic up higher, and impatient with his clumsiness, she tugged it off herself. They had done this much before, but absence had made every sensation stronger. This was where she had always stopped him, where she had always drawn the line so that she stayed in charge of what they did, so that she remained hers, and hers alone. She did not stop him. He pulled off his own nightshirt. He wore nothing underneath. He unlaced her trousers and pulled them off. She thought he would try to put himself inside her and thought, maybe, she wanted him to. Instead, he lifted her legs and kissed her, and kissed her and kissed her where she had never imagined being kissed. Lada's control fled on the wave of pleasure, and she did not miss it. She cried out like a wounded thing, but Mahmed put a hand over her mouth as he shifted on top of her. She let him. 21. Late March.
"How many angels can dance on the head of a pin?" a man shouted, a sneer deforming his pockmarked face.
Another man jabbed his finger into the first man's chest, screaming something about the father and the son. The pockmarked man threw a punch, and then they were wrestling on the muddy street, biting and kicking. Cyprian did not even pause as he steered Radu around them.
"People here are very religious."
Cyprian laughed darkly.
"To all our downfall."
"There she is,"
he pointed. With nothing else to do for the day, Radu had asked to see more of the city. He wanted to see the fabled Hagia Sophia Cathedral in particular. Mahmed had told him to visit. It had been his only actual instruction, and until Constantine called for him again, there was not much he could do besides wander with his eyes and ears open. The street led to a courtyard where the massive cathedral loomed. It was darker than Cyprian's laugh. Everywhere they had passed churches with bells ringing, a near constant stream of people going in and out. But the Hagia Sophia, the jewel of Constantinople, the church so magnificent that stories said it had converted the entire population of Russia to Orthodoxy, sat cold and empty in the late afternoon rain. "Why is no one here?" Radu asked. They walked up to the gate, and Cyprian pushed experimentally against the door. It was locked. "We had Mass in Latin here a few weeks ago." Radu knew that Orthodox services were conducted in Greek, but he did not follow Cyprian's meaning. A dog ran past them, followed by a young boy with bare feet. "Run, Papa!" he shouted. "Stop! Run, Papa! Come back right now!" Did that boy call his dog the Roman Pope? Cyprian rapped his knuckles against the beautiful lacquered wood of the Hagia Sophia door. "Yes. Half the dogs in the city are called that. While my uncle appeals to the Pope for help, people curse his name. My uncle pushed for union between the two churches, and even held Mass here to celebrate the official reunion, the ending of the schism between East and West. And now the most beautiful church in Christendom is silent and abandoned because it was tainted by watered wine, Catholic wafers, and worship in Latin." Cyprian sighed, resting the palm of his hand reverently against the door. "And for all her sacrifice, the Hagia Sophia brought us nothing. The Pope sends no aid." He shook his head. "Come, we can see some relics. That is always fun." "You and I have different opinions of fun." Cyprian laughed, this time a bright sound at odds with the dreary, wet day. "We take our relics very seriously in this city. They protect us," he winked. "Do you really believe that?" "Does it matter? If the people believe it, then it gives them strength, which gives the city strength, which means the relics worked." "That is very circular." "We Byzantines love circles. Time, the moon, arguments, and most of all, coins. All good things are circular." They passed another empty section of the city. As they walked, Cyprian cheerfully gave the history of this pillar or that crumbling foundation. The whole city was steeped in heritage and falling down around them. They were almost to another church when the ground rumbled beneath their feet. Radu stumbled, and Cyprian caught him. A sliding noise came from above. "Run!" Cyprian shouted, tugging Radu away from the walls of a house next to them. Slate crashed down with shattering force where they had just been standing. The two men dove onto the muddy street. Radu breathed heavily, his arms tangled up in Cyprian's. Cyprian's eyes met his own, black pupils nearly swallowing the grey. Then he shook his head and stood. They brushed as much of the mud from their clothes as they could, but it was a lost cause. "Thank you," Radu said. "Your quick instincts saved us both." Cyprian smiled shyly, reaching out to flick away some mud on Radu's shoulder. "Consider it partial payment against the debt I owe you." Guilt seeped the color from the world. Radu swallowed, turning away. "Does that happen often? The earth shaking like that?" "More and more lately.
We have also had unseasonable storms,
and a miserable winter and a torturous spring. You can imagine how much that boosts the morale of people looking for signs and portents in everything around them." They heard someone shouting up ahead. Radu wondered if it was another fight, but the cadence suggested a performance. They made their way toward the voice, crossing a couple of streets until they found a crowd gathered around a man standing on the wall outside a shrine.
"Wretched Romans! How you have been led astray! You have trusted in the power of the Franks, rather than the hope in your God. You have lost the true religion, and our city will be destroyed for your sins."
The man, who wore rough woven brown robes, lifted his arms to the cloud-laden skies and tipped his head back